Hello and welcome to another episode of the CG Garage. This is episode number 103, featuring my good friend Eric Sheely. Before I get into the podcast itself, I want to wish everyone a Happy New Year. I am actually recording this podcast on January 2nd, and I know I am a day late because yesterday was New Year's Day, and I decided I didn't want to actually record or put out the podcast that day, so I am doing it last minute and a day late, so it's actually more late than anything, but I'm doing it outside, and I'm enjoying myself. In my house, I've actually enjoying some leftover champagne because why not use it? And I've got a little bit of orange juice since it is breakfast time, so I might as well make myself a mimosa. And I'm enjoying that with a little splash of Chambord, and I decided to add a few drops of grapefruit seed bitters, which is an amazing addition, and I thought it would be really good, and it is. Highly recommend it. If you guys like mimosas, try some grapefruit seed bitters if you can find it. Anyway, that being said, this podcast, as I said, is Eric Sheely, who is a very good friend of mine. I've known him for 15 years or more, and a really great guy. You'll quickly figure out how we've been close for a long time. We talk about a lot of good things. He's a very creative person. He's done, he's a filmmaker, he's a script writer, he's also a CG artist, obviously a visual effects artist. I worked with him in visual effects for a long time. And he knows an enormous amount about film. He's a lot like my friend Dan Thron, who I've done several podcasts with, and he may actually join us on another Dan Thron podcast if we do another one, which I'm sure we will. And so he's a really great guy. We talk about an enormous amount of things, both serious and not serious. We talk about how things have changed over the last 15 years between he and I, and how our health has changed and getting older. And yes, we're now old visual effects artists. We weren't old when we started, but we're older guys now, and we have a lot of health problems that have happened because of working in visual effects, which is a very strange one. And so really good conversation. I really like Eric, and hopefully you guys will enjoy this podcast. And hopefully you guys had a great and wonderful New Year's Eve. And we'll enjoy 2017 as much as I am looking forward to it as well. All right, thanks, guys.
Welcome to another CG Garage, where the Chaos Group talks. You'll know it's over when the last bucket drops. We're gonna fire off rays in high dynamic range. We know that ambient occlusion is passé. Global illumination won't lead you astray. And while image-based lighting is really swell, you need to make sure everything has Fresnel.
Does it feel good?
It feels so good.
What do you want to talk about, Eric?
We can talk about lots of things. Let's talk about the business.
Let's talk about getting that microphone closer to your mouth.
A little bit closer right here.
K-Earth 101.
You like that? I don't know. We always have fun.
We always have fun. Christopher, come on.
You're doing your walking?
I'm doing the walking impersonation. It's good. When you hear it on the microphone, you say, Chris, you should have Christopher walking read about V-Ray settings.
About talking about Fresnel?
Fresnel. Let's talk Fresnel. Come on. It starts and it fades off to the side because of the light bounces all over the place. I like it. Mental ray.
Really? We're going to do that?
No.
I can't do that.
No, I'm kidding.
The mental ray guys are actually good friends with us.
They are such wonderful people.
They are very nice. They're in Germany. They're still part of NVIDIA.
They are. But what's NVIDIA doing with them? Because they own iRay too.
I don't.
Who made iRay?
Honestly, all the details of that I'm not sure about.
Was it something, but is iRay always?
Well, actually, I do know something, but I don't want to be wrong, so I'm not going to say anything. But they're Mental Ray now you can either buy or it comes with. It's not part of the Autodesk bundle anymore, right? So when you get Mental Ray, I mean, when you get Maya or Max, it doesn't come with Mental Ray.
Comes with Arnold.
Some of it comes with Arnold. I'm not sure about Max, but I know that Maya definitely comes with Arnold now.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's all that detail. We're still, it's fine. There's a lot of choices out there for renderers. We're one of them, and we're happy with it. We're doing very well.
I tried to download Felix, and I was having...
Project Felix.
Project Felix, and I was having problems with the server at work, so I couldn't do it. But I wanted, because I'm part of Adobe Cloud, I thought I'd plug that in. But that's something that's really cool that you guys are doing.
Yeah, that's very different.
I know.
What I think is, you know, most of our users are very power user type people, right? They really know all the settings and all the stuff. And Project Felix is, there is no settings. It's literally just, it just renders for you and it knows how to optimize your scene for you or just does it, you know? And so you basically have a quality slider and that's about it. It's a very different way of looking at things. And, you know, it's cool. It's not, it's for a different type of customer. It's for people who want to do, you know, a product rendering.
That's right.
And it's great, you know, it does some really like, cause we all know about image-based lighting, right? But they used like a lot of their really cool AI and, you know, deep learning technology to just like, all right, we're going to take whatever that background image is and we're going to derive an image-based
light from it.
From that. That's kind of an awesome thing. Yeah. So, which is invisible to the user. It's like, just put a background in there. Don't worry. We'll take care of the lighting. We'll take care of the shadows. And it knows how to put the perspective in there. And it's just smart.
Did you go to them or they came to you?
I can't tell about the details of that, actually.
Could you just give the numbers of what people... don't talk about the details so much like where you met and signed the contract, but how much money you guys made, who's getting what.
I can't talk about that, Eric.
Or who you know that.
Okay. This is being recorded, Eric.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Okay. You're always going to try to get the most
out of it. I'm not trying to cause problems. I'm just saying if I think people in the V-Ray community would like to know, but that's fine. You know, that's
your... We have a very good relationship with Adobe. We're very happy to have that project happen. It's kind of a big deal for us to sort of see what that market, you know, how that can respond. The thing that I think is interesting about it, if I'm going to sort of take a step back and sort of look at it, not necessarily as a Chaos Group employee, but as a visual effects or CG guy, is that rendering was always this unbelievably complex thing. And we always competed with each other about how much we knew or how smart we were, et cetera, et cetera. What this Project Felix is showing is like, no, rendering should be an iPhone, right? Yeah. It should, like, you don't need a Leica to take a good picture. You need someone who just goes, oh, look, cool, click, done, right? And that's what Project Felix is. It's basically giving you the best possible results with not you having to think about anything. And that's a completely different client base. And rendering is not necessarily, it's not a Leica all the time. It's an iPhone. And there's great iPhone pictures out there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So that's kind of the thing that I think is interesting to think about.
Yeah.
It's interesting how you want to go with this to start the podcast.
Well, no, I saw it and you had mentioned that you guys were part of it. And I've been a V-Ray user since you introduced me. God, Jesus, a long time ago.
Right.
And then I was like, you know what? I'm a member. I'm going to do it. But I'm still going to download it and work with it because I think it's a cool idea. It's interesting because I noticed that like Maya now, the new Maya, because I'm a C4D user, Max user, Maya user. Mm-hmm. And Maya is now like a little bit like C4D and so much of the MoGraph stuff. It's like they're reaching out for a new audience of creators,
okay,
which is interesting. And I just find that so great that you're now working with Adobe because it's like you're reaching out rather than just doing monster, you know, V-Ray stuff or cars or configurators. It's like this is reaching out to illustrators all over and it's great.
I think that's a market that needs, you know, illustration should not be relegated to illustration, right? In a sense that rendering, especially ray trace rendering, or specifically the way that people like Adobe are looking at it, is photography, right? Mm-hmm. And they're saying, okay, how do we take, or CG photography, right? So that's what rendering really is. And so how do we take everything we know that, you know, a renderer like V-Ray can do and simplify it down the same way that you would use an iPhone, right? Yeah. Or you use, you know, a point and shoot camera of some kind where I'm just like, I just turn it on. It's on the green button and I kick go. Right. And sometimes it doesn't turn out great, but it's not necessarily the fault of the renderer. It's the fault of, I didn't frame it right. You know, whatever, something moved, whatever. So that happens in cameras and it'll happen in a rendering too. But a ray tracer is basically a camera. It's funny because I talk to people every now and then. It's like, so what do you do? It's like, well, now I work for a okay, you know, a software company. So what is your software? It's like, well, we make a renderer. It's like, what's that? I was like, we're like a CG camera. Yeah, I mean, I guess that's the best exactly way to describe it, right? So it's hard to explain that. You know, I've always reminded of my, I think I may have said this on the podcast before, but my advisor in college, I was a math major, and he was going through his tenure, right? And so he invited us to his tenure review to go check it out. You know, he had to give it in front of a peer of people and give his presentation about the research he's doing, et cetera. So we all went there, and he's great. He was great. I was studying topology or abstract algebra. No, it's not topology, and non-Euclidean geometry with him. And so he started his talk because he was doing some very complicated math problems. So it's all ring theory math problems. And that was his area of research. And he was saying, my uncle always told me, if you can't explain what you do to a seven-year-old, you're probably a con man.
That's great.
It's like, I kept thinking about that, and I'm like, oh, what do you do in Chaos Group Labs? I better find a way to explain this. And so that's what I've been struggling with. Because I do a lot of interesting things, but what I do is I bring them all together in some interesting little
aggregator sense.
I'm an angry. I have a lot of people that know really cool stuff, and I have technology that can help support their ideas, and that's kind of where it happens, I guess. Yeah. But enough about that. Let's go back to you. You and I, we just figured it out today, 15 years ago, that we knew each other.
I know.
I was still at Gensler. It was my last gig at Gensler, I think.
That's right.
Not gig, because we don't do gigs at Gensler.
I thought about it last night, and I always forgot your boss's name, the guy that was paying my, writing the checks. I still forget his name, but I would be like Rob or John.
You always got his name, Rob.
That's right.
Now I'm blanking on his name.
There you go. Old age.
Gene Watanabe.
Gene. Yeah, I absolutely was not even within that range. But I'd be like, I need to talk to Rob. He'd be like, who's Rob? I'm like, who's the guy that I talk to every day?
Yeah, Gene.
Gene
Watanabe, who is one of the big designers at Gensler. And we were designing. So this is what, let's just give people a backstory. I was going to do, it was me and Mark Briggs. And we were going to do a big animation of what is now,
because back then it wasn't.
Yeah, it's on Avenue 2000 Avenue of Stars, which is now the big CAA building. That's their headquarters, right? But back then it was still a spec building. They didn't have a permanent tenant yet. And so we needed to do an animation to showcase how awesome the space was, which eventually was now the CAA building and is featured in many, many movies. Did you notice that? Have you seen it? Yeah, it's in a lot of movies. But it wasn't being built, and we had to make this animation to sort of showcase it. And I needed an extra help on it, because Mark and I are like, we're architects, we know how to do this stuff and that, but we need a little bit of, we need some an extra hands on there, and we needed someone to like come up with some fun ideas or whatever. And so I called Eric Hansen.
I just talked to Eric Hansen last
week. Right? Yeah. Okay. So I called Eric Hansen, and he goes, oh, I got this guy, Eric Shealy. He does all kinds of crazy stuff. And he's like, I know this stuff. And so I said, I hired you.
That's right.
And freelance. And that was the first time we worked together.
That's right. And then you went to DD, and then you got me in there. It was great.
Yeah.
And then...
But I remember that building. You're like, let's do something fun. And us, because Mark and I think like architects. We just want to show the building. We don't think of more cinematic things. Yeah. We're not filmmakers, or at least I wasn't back then. And so you're like, yeah, let's have some birds flying out. Like,
I did the bird cannon, as you used to call it. I got the particles wrong, and it just would come out like a big cannon.
It basically looked like someone had a shotgun and
it shot the birds.
Shot birds out of a shotgun.
But it's, you know what? I think the client loved it.
They did. And I remember at one point you were just kind of exploring the model, because the model was very detailed out of every part of
beautiful.
The building. Because it was part of the building. That's how we built it. And you looked at all the underground parking, which was unbelievably complicated, and you came up with an animation of how the traffic would flow through there. And you showed us, like, Eric came up with this, and I'm like, what?
That was so long ago.
Yeah.
That was so long ago.
And
then you
ago.
Went to...
I went to DD after
the
that.
The day after tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah. Roland's should have. Yeah.
Yeah. That was a long, long time ago.
And you were... I think you went on Captain.
I was at Sky Captain Sky for 2 years.
Sky Captain
in the World of Tomorrow.
In the World of Tomorrow.
Next, close to the Budweiser factory in Van Nuys, in a warehouse.
Yeah. And you worked on that for 2 years?
2 years.
Wow.
It was crazy. It was a lot of work. It was a lot of fun, though.
Did you see the article that came out about that recently?
I did.
About the movie that no one really knew about or something like that?
I still. He and his brother were incredible. They gave me a lot of freedom, and they were just really great, great, great guys. And I always remember Kevin's the brother and Carrie. And I always remember Carrie and I would always talk about films, and I love Cimino, who just passed, I think, like 6 months ago. I was a huge fan of Cimino. It's like The Deer Hunter and Thunderbolt and Lightfoot is one of my favorite movies. And his teacher and one of his favorite filmmakers, or at least was Alexander McKendrick.
Okay, hold on a second. Go ahead, keep going.
And he did The Sweet Smell of Success. Uh-huh. And it's a guy who ended up like making, I don't know, I think he only made one or two movies. And I think he got frustrated with the system, I think it was. But it was just funny how Carrie, you know, kind of ended up the same way. And it's just
but he
like,
ended up kind of being screwed by the whole thing, I think, a little bit. Maybe.
I think there's, you have to be part hustler. And he's a good guy and really talented. And
do you think the movie was actually good, though?
I think here's the. I thought the short that I saw was I really loved it and their vision. Sure. And if you look at the movie, the first part of the movie is so different stylistically than the rest of it because the rest of it went to other studios and everyone just kind of controlled. I always remember seeing somebody Xerox part of the script one day, and it looked like a rainbow because there was, I think they had to come up with new color paper styles in order. Cause every time you do a change, you have to put a different color paper in.
Yeah.
It was like it was like a Pantone chart. It was the script. It was ridiculous. And I was like, all right, there's too many cooks in the kitchen.
Yeah.
And I think if he had just said, you know what, this is not my vision, man. I wanted to make something for 5 million and get it out the door and not have a rainbow colored script. But maybe he, you know, it just became that and it's hard and, you know, but I love the film. I love the concept. That was a great project for me because that's the kind of thing I like is where everyone comes together and makes something. And
well, you've always been a very interesting creative voice and very unique. One thing I'll say about you, and I mentioned this to you before, is you're not necessarily a person that's going to be able to come up with amazingly complex pipeline, blah, 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 blah.
No,
that's not your forte at all. But what your forte is I've got, you know, I can go up to you and it's like, all right, I've got a problem with something, a shot or show or whatever. And I can say, I've got a problem with this and I just got to try to figure out a solution. And I can say, hold on a second, I'll be right back. I'm going to the bathroom, I'll be right back. And in the time that I go to the bathroom, you'll have 5 ideas. And at least 3 of them would be like really worth pursuing. And they're not necessarily technical ideas. They're creative ideas. Like, you know, like you said, hey, you know, let's make this, let's vibe up this animation. Let's create a bird cannon. Yes, we were joking about that. But you had all these amazing shot ideas. Like you came up with the garage idea within an hour and I didn't even ask for that because you were just sitting around doing stuff.
I'm wondering if, I guess because I started with working for directors in New York.
Yeah.
And then I was a camera truck driver in New York for Tony Kaye and Joe Pitka. And then I worked for Abel Ferrar.
Can you tell some Joe Pitka stories on the podcast?
I can, but I don't know if it is a true story. Some people will deny it, but apparently he screamed at somebody.
But first of all, okay, we should tell people who Joe Pitka is.
He's a brilliant guy.
He's a very smart director and he's done a lot of commercials. He has also got a reputation for being unbelievably aggressive.
Yeah.
Tell me if I'm wrong, because this is what I've heard. And I don't know if I heard it from you or someone else, but Ghostbusters 2, the villain in Ghostbusters 2 with the white hair.
It's based on him.
It's a persona of Joe Pitka.
Well, I worked for him in like 91 and 92, and there was a story, and I actually met the production coordinator who was on that job, that he screamed at a PA at the entrance of the 59th Street Bridge at like 3 o'clock on a Friday, trying to go to Silver Cup Studios.
Right.
And the guy got out and threw the keys over the bridge and walked back to the New York side and left the minivan with him.
Didn't
in
he say something like crazy, like, if you don't get me to the bridge, you'll be fired? And he goes, right. Like, he said, what do I have to lose?
And he just threw it over. And I always thought that was legend, but even though it was 6 months prior to me working for him, but apparently, yeah, it did happen. But it's, you know, he is very successful.
But you work with directors.
Yes.
You work with directors a lot. So one thing, you know, I've had several directors on the show. And one thing that I think that everyone should take from this, if they're going to think about all the directors I've had on here, including you, because you also directed some amazing work as well, is ideas. You got to come up with ideas, and a ton of them, and not be afraid for them to fail.
Yeah, I think, but as somebody who's, you know, as a CG artist and souping and all sorts of other stuff, working with directors, I've come across a couple directors where I absolutely, I'm not trying to take his job. I'm just trying to like make this become better and work. And I would pitch ideas and they would just feel like I'm stepping on their toes and relegate me to the back. And it's gotten me in trouble. And I'm like, I'm not, you know, I guess because at Sky Captain, everyone's just throwing ideas out. Mm. You know, just trying to make something great.
Sure.
And other places I've worked at, it's just throw ideas, work with the director. I remember I helped out with Joe Kaczynski's Blackbird.
Oh, right.
Right.
You're at Speed Shape, yep.
And I would just talk to him about heist films and stuff. Yeah. And it was just like, it's about ideas, percolate them, get them out. And some directors like him, you know, talk about ideas, and he has a distinct vision, but he could still take ideas from people. Mm-hmm. Some directors don't.
And it's interesting because he on when we did our 100th episode, he was on there and he was talking about going for jobs, right? And it's if he's doing commercials, right? And he's pitching commercials. And he talked about like 24 commercials before he got the Halo one that he wanted to do, right? And he's done a couple other ones. He did the Mezzo one. He did the this, that, you know. But he pitched like 24.
The Mezzo's nice.
Yeah, the Mezzo's nice. But that was before. But then he got that big Halo one he did at DD.
That's right.
A big deal. But he said it was freaking horrible because he basically, every time he would give a pitch, he had to pitch it like, this is the best idea ever. Mm-hmm. And really feel that. Because otherwise, it just goes nowhere. Even if it's a good idea, it goes nowhere unless you convince people that you are so excited about this. And then they don't do it. And you have to be okay with that and say, okay, I'm throwing that away. On to the next one. So you have to say, this is the most incredible thing ever and really feel it. And then when it doesn't happen, you have to be okay with just saying, fine, now I got another new idea and it's amazing.
That's right.
And you got to do that over and over and over and over and over again, like every 2 weeks or whatever it is, and commit to every single one and not be disparaged. That's a hard gig.
It is a hard gig.
Yeah.
It's a very, very hard gig. And then you get rejected. Some people don't. I have friends who are directors who I think are really good directors who've kind of given up because they get
because
beat up.
Of rejections.
Yeah, they get beat up so much. And I tell one of them, because he's a good cutter, that I think he needs a day job.
Sure.
Like, just do cutting trailers for, you know, 8 months and don't think about directing. Mm-hmm. And then go back to it, you know? But you're just so focused on it. And when you get rejected, it just piles up. And now you're just like, I'm done.
Right.
Which is unnecessary. So I feel like you have to give up that instrument for a while.
Right.
In order to juice up. I knew as a guitarist, I always remember reading, I just read so much about music as a kid. And like Jimmy Page would do an album and a tour and then he wouldn't play guitar for 7 months. He wouldn't pick anything up. And then he would pick it up again and all this new album would come out. Right. So you just have to give it up a little bit and kind of do other things and read and go to museums and probably for Jimmy Page's do lots of drugs and then go back to
Sure. You need a... I've had that. I mean, I remember, you know, in grad school, and this is exactly the analogy you used. In grad school, I went in to do my thesis, my architecture thesis, and I spent the whole summer preparing this idea, and it was basic. That was the problem. I had one idea, which I thought was really good, and I was like, I'm going all in on this one idea, and I'd sit there, and I prepared it, and I was like, this is really well figured out, blah, 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 and I presented it. I selected my advisor for my thesis, who happened to also be the dean of the school, which was a bit of a stressful thing. And he was like, all right, let's see what you got. And I presented it, and he goes, that's bullshit. Like, literally, he's like, who the fuck cares about that? And he would say, he would basically be honest exactly like that. And he said it like that. And I was devastated. A friend of mine, Bob Shea, who, interestingly, his name is Bob Shea, and interesting, just got back in touch with him. He lives in Seattle. He used to work for NBBJ for years, and now I think he works for Gensler. Really fun guy. But I was smoking at the time, and so I was outside the architecture school completely devastated, and I was like smoking, like chain-smoking cigarettes, pissed off and upset about it. And then he looked and was like, what's wrong, Chris? And I said, well, I just told him everything that happened. And he goes, that's all right. You know what you can do? He's like, you take a piece of paper and make a couple of lists. List all the things you like to do and write those down on a piece of paper. And then list all the things you don't like to do and write those on the paper. And then what you can do is you can try to do as many of the things you like to do as possible and avoid doing as many of the things you don't like to do as well. And it seems so stupid when he thinks about it, right?
Yeah.
But it's like, all right. And then what I did is I just sat down on my computer and just played. I just played on my computer.
That's right.
And I just played. And suddenly something just came up out of it. And it turned out to be a really fun thesis. And I had an amazing time doing it. But it wouldn't have happened if I didn't just...
Take a break
from something, right?
I know. And it's not just I'm taking a break to watch television, but
yeah,
there is taking a break. And it's also I try to create every day knowing that no one's going to see it, but I still...
You do things.
I do. I wake up and I wake up every morning and I draw and I wake up every morning and create and then go to work and then, but you know, something you did 5 years ago was going to pop up in 6 months.
I love creating things that are not necessarily going to be seen.
Just have to do, get it out of your system.
Yeah.
Like, you know, writers like Somerset Maugham used to wake up and just start every day at 9 and write for 3 hours. That's the only consistent. And it doesn't matter what it is, just do it.
Right.
And then, in 2 years of that, you have, you know, razor's edge. But the point is, that's just the dedication of hitting it every day or just create every day and not have a specific end goal. It's just to create. And,
You've been very good at that, though.
I think still do it. I still do it. I've been shooting. A friend of mine bought a VR camera, and he didn't know how to use it because he didn't realize you have to stitch all the stuff. So, which was like, okay, yeah, that's part of the process. But he said, well, you can have the camera. So I have it at home. So I go out downtown and.
Is it like a jaunt or something? Or
it's a 10 camera, 360 Heroes thing, and it's great. GoPros, and I just go out and I shoot and cut and do my thing, and I'm just exploring and working on some stuff. But it's great. It's been wonderful.
What do you think about VR?
I love it, and I've been doing more and more of it, and you know, working with Unreal and Unity. And for me, it's because my grad school, I went and I was a I got a master's in film and theater design. So for me, I find it wonderful. I don't really like a lot of the titles out there because I'm not a video game guy, but I like the world, immersive world that it creates. And that's kind of where I kind of feel like I want to go more. But it's still in the early stages. And, you know, God, dealing with GoPros is it's kind of a pain in the ass.
But do you really think it's a filmmaking medium?
Here's the thing. I do, not now, but there are moments where you're in it, where there are moments in movies. It's an interesting. Movies that, you know, you watch The Deer Hunter, but you watch movies or like Blade Runner. There are movies where there are frames that or scenes that capture you. Right. And you feel like you're transported. For me, it was as a kid.
Sure.
Into those worlds.
Okay.
And I really felt like connected to those worlds. And I find that moment that you would feel in the movie theater, like, oh my God, I'm on the roof and it's raining and, you know, the tears in the rain, you know, like that world, I can be in that world. That's those moments in VRs like that. That's not a narrative thing. It's just, it makes me feel like.
But don't you think that's something that's accomplished? And I'm not sure. I play a lot of, because I do a lot of VR work, as you know. So I play a lot of devil's advocate in a scenario.
Yeah.
And that's why I try to get people to really express a difference. I'm not going to sit here and say VR is the future. I think it does have a place in the future.
AR.
Well, AR does too. I'm not going to get into that specifically, but I'm talking specifically about filmmaking experiences. Remember when 3D movies were huge? I don't think 3D movies are big anymore.
No.
I don't know if they are or not, but I certainly
So you
don't.
Think it's a gimmick?
Well, hold on. Let me get back to my point. Let me get
back
to my point.
You're saying it's a gimmick. That's fine.
Well, it is a gimmick in a sense that for filmmaking, it's a gimmick. Because I think people think that VR is a filmmaking tool when it's not. I think VR has a huge application that's not necessarily about filmmaking.
Yeah.
I think VR has a huge application towards design, towards architecture, towards building, towards travel, towards all kinds of stuff. But telling people that VR is going to be the next movie experience is not necessarily the truth. And
I agree. I agree with because it's hard, because how is somebody going to make the next, you know, King of Comedy, if everyone would make that, you know, Scorsese, right. or like Goodfellas, mm-hmm. or a great movie, when you're in control, in a sense. It's very hard to control the viewer. Because
VR is a first-person experience.
That's right. So I like the experience of it, and I think that's where...
Okay, let me go back to my point, because I think what you just said, let's take your analogy of Blade Runner, Tears in the Rain scenario, right? You experienced that. You felt like you were there.
Yeah.
You did that with a two-dimensional film.
I realized
okay,
that.
Okay, so you don't need... My point about the 3D is like, wow, look at this movie in 3D. It's like it's really... You can look at a 3D movie and go, wow, that was great. You can go home and look at it in 2D. It's not a lesser movie. It's exactly the same movie. By 5 minutes into a 3D movie, you kind of forget it's 3D.
Mm-hmm.
And for the most part. So what's the point of it being in 3D in the first place? Because most of movies is about storytelling, right?
Yeah.
And VR is not. Or do you think it is?
It could. Well, there are guys I know that there's new editing tools. Well, it can be. It possibly could. Right now, I think it's so early. And I think also it's very hard as somebody who goes out on the street in the early morning with a 10-camera GoPro ring. It's very hard to wrangle, and it's very hard to like get actor to walk up. And it's I'm still learning it, so I'm not totally sold. I think it has to be more accessible. It has to be easier.
Well,
and then at the same time, I'm still trying to wrangle the how can I control the viewer with my story if they're going to be looking to the left and I want them to look to the right.
Okay. So let me sort of – what I'm trying to make sure is I'm not saying that VR – VR has no business in storytelling or filmmaking. I'm not trying to say that. I'm really glad that people like you are experimenting in this. I'm really glad that people are looking at this like, how do I do it? Because – when we looked at filmmaking, like the invisible style of editing, people had to invent that, right?
Yeah.
And so you're inventing the same thing. Like, how do you get people's attention? Do you use sound? Do you use this? Do you use that? Understanding that whole process. So
there is a thing, recently, my old writing partner, Bill Griffith, he is an enormously big Robert Altman fan. Mm-hmm. And I love Cimino, but I loved Altman's work. And I basically, we would get together and we'd watch Nashville. And he would always go into detail about how Robert Altman layered the sound and all the different mics all over in the placement and made an immersive world. So you're never really focused on one character. There's so many things going and layered. And I kind of feel like if VR can be like an Altman film like Nashville, where you're following all these different storylines in the same frame and all these things, it could be really wonderful.
That's a great point.
But I don't know if it's there yet. And filmmakers like the next Altman have to be able not, the Wi-Fi with the GoPro and it goes out and all these things. It's got to be one great, big, nice camera and be able to shoot. And it's getting there and not $400,000.
I think something that maybe this is just me because it's a new medium and I don't know how to interact with it. And maybe in 5-10 years or whatever, people will be completely okay with the idea. But the thing is, when you go into VR, you're supposed to be within that environment. And then if, let's say, you have those amazing things, like an Altman film is like, well, look around all the stuff that's mm-hmm. happening. Or Woody Allen does that too.
That's right.
Things all
the layering. Or the Coppola shot with Scorsese and Goodfellas. Yeah. It's like this whole thing is going. You're still being directed, though.
Right.
But there's all the waiters going by and the singing and the people at the table staring at them.
It's one of my favorite things. But I guess maybe when I go into VR and I see some action taking place or whatever, I always feel like the awkward person at a party that can't quite say anything or do anything, you know what I mean? And someone all of a sudden is like, oh, you're here at the blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, you know, I feel like I'm some guy that is at a Cirque du Soleil performance and they pull me up on stage and he makes me feel all uncomfortable. And in the,
that's an interesting point. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't know.
We'll see. I mean, I follow a lot of the cameras and the techniques, and it's, you know, this year is going to be 2017 is going to be way different than 2016. And
yeah.
I see a lot of people picking them up and starting to work with them. Somebody sent me a script about 2 months ago and said, this would be a great VR film. And because you love, you know, rock music so much, you know, so much about music, this might be an interesting film for you to do. And I was like, as a VR film, but it's about a band in a recording studio. And I was like, you know what, that actually isn't a bad idea. And I was thinking more of the Nashville thing with, and so I was like, all right. And so, I'm just kind of looking at that, but I'm kind of also testing. But it's definitely, there's a lot of creative people getting a hold of these tools, and I think it's great. Mm. And I don't know if you could look back at this in 5 years and say, you were full of... No.
Who knows?
Yeah.
I think we're all, I don't know, it's a very new medium. It's interesting. I was just wanted to hear your thoughts about it.
I approached it slowly in the beginning, but there's so many things about it that I love, particularly with theater and film design background, that in these immersive worlds, that it's great, but I'm not a video game guy. I don't like video games.
I don't necessarily think that video games is the answer either.
Yeah, but I see a lot of titles look like video games. And they're
big, that's because it's an easy way to do it, right?
I know.
It's like, I'm not necessarily knocking it out either. I think video games are fine, and I think they've got a good environment. But right now, tools like Unreal and Unity, they're offering people VR technology that's going to make it easy. So I was like, we'll just use that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And that's fine. And that works. I think there's other ways to do things as well. I think there's ways of making things, you know, like
what you're but the interesting thing, we're talking about these immersive worlds and stuff, but at the same time, it seems like the biggest market is going to be mobile. So all this stuff is going to be compressed down.
Maybe. But maybe mobile will get more powerful, right?
Yes. You got a point there, Chris. So.
This is, you know, we did some amazing visual effects on computers.
Stealth.
Stealth. Okay, your phone is probably 10 times more powerful than the computers we used to make stealth on.
I know. That was a great movie. I watched that every month. I watched that just to kind of go through what a good movie. Now, it was definitely painful.
It was painful.
It was definitely a tough film to work on.
Yeah.
But I've been
like Rob. Rob was awesome.
Oh, he's great. And you know what he produced? I'm almost positive. Is a movie that I love and nobody, well, I don't even think he likes it, but Bill Murray did The Razor's Edge in 84, 85. And Jack Simchi did the soundtrack, which I have on album and I listen to it in my painting studio. Mm-hmm. It's such a great film. And he produced it.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. And I wanted to ask him about it in the commander room or whatever they called it, but I felt like I was going to... You know, somebody was going to give me a bad look.
He did another one called Saturday Night. It wasn't Saturday Night Fever.
TGIF. Thank God it's Friday.
Thank God it's Friday.
You bet, baby.
Yeah.
Coming at you. That was a Saturday Night Fever ripoff.
It was a Saturday Night. It was like a comedy. It was like Airplane and Saturday Night Fever put together.
That's right.
It's a grand, I don't think it had like all this. Danny DeVito was in it, I think.
There was a movie also like that called Car Wash, which Joel Schumacher, I think, produced or wrote.
Have you listened to any of the podcasts I've done with Dan Thron yet?
Dan worked with me at a company in Venice, and we would talk about movies all the time.
Yeah, you and Dan.
He's a horrible person. I don't want to speak badly of him. I love the guy. He's really great. We would talk about movies at a different level, and he absolutely knows so much about
films. Yeah, you should come on one of our – because we've done – okay, so by the time this comes out, it'll be three podcasts. It'll be three podcasts I did with him. One was just talking about the Star Wars saga, and then we did another one about the Mad Max series.
Okay,
Mad Max. And then coming out – well, this will be – it'll be past for people listening, but for you, coming out on Sunday will be Jurassic Park talk.
Oh.
And so we basically are all franchise.
He's a good filmmaker.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's a talented guy.
Speaking of filmmaking, let's talk about, remember one of the first shorts that I saw you do was Mia?
Missing Mia.
Missing Mia.
And then I did Danger Tokyo, which I wanted to make Basically a trilogy about accounting, and it just didn't work out. It just collapsed, but it would have been great. I think the world would have been receptive. I still remember
the early days of the Danger Tokyo thing.
Oh my God.
It was such a funny, this is exactly what I'm talking about.
But the idea was great, but here's the key, really. If you're going to make a, that was the short. I decided I didn't need a script. I can just go out and shoot and we'll improv the whole thing. Yeah. I had like 68 hours of footage on DV tapes. Like, oh God, I was editing every night till like 2 a.m.
Right. Well, the idea behind it, you were trying to come up with an idea of how am I going to do another short and have it all paid for by tax dollars?
That's right.
No.
Accountant suggests to his client that if he goes to Tokyo to make a short, an action film.
You wanted to go on vacation to Tokyo and say, I'll just use it under the guise that I'm going to Tokyo
to shoot a film
and then I can deduct the whole vacation. As a tax deductible.
You can. I think that's a great idea.
But you actually did part of it.
I did. I shot the thing.
You went to Tokyo.
I did.
And you had your wife with a camera.
That's right.
And you were sitting in the middle of the streets in Tokyo going,
doing action.
No!
Yeah, exactly.
And she's like, can we go shopping now?
That's right. We went around Tokyo. God bless my wife. She put up with so much crap. Yes, I shot it. And like, this is a great shot.
I just basically improv that opportunistic
shooting.
And then
I came back and I cast and we shot. We did the whole accounting scenes.
Yes, I remember. I was at the office.
That's right.
Part of it was at an office. And you basically, the idea was, you made a story about the story.
That's right.
So you said, okay, I'm just going to go there. And you became a character that was mostly just on the phone in Tokyo.
That's right. In my robe.
In your robe. And in the background. And then your friend who played the accountant.
Yeah, Jerry Katzman.
Jerry. God, he was so funny. The premise is like, he starts off as like this harebrained idea. How can I, no, you can't do that. And he's going through this scenario of.
That's right.
Of like trying to figure out how he's going to deduct this entire crazy trip to Tokyo to slowly turning into Hollywood producer out of nowhere.
That's right. And I always remember like the scene we shot in the accounting office where he was like, his boss was like trying to stress to him the importance of decimal points in his job. And it was just like, it just went on forever. It was very funny.
And he was, and his outfits were slowly changing from like, you know.
Yeah, to slick dude.
To slick dude, yeah. And he was like interviewing.
That was so, I'm telling you, I had so much fun.
Pyrotechnic guys.
We were shooting everywhere. And I just recruited all these actors I worked with. And we were just driving around in my Isuzu, just like shooting like crazy. And it was a lot of fun. I mean, we shot so much. I would just go around and shoot, write, shoot. I flamed out a little bit. I got a little tired. But it was definitely a lot of fun. That was such a great creative time, too.
There was another amazing story. This is Paul George. Remember Paul George, right? And he came back to work one day, and he said, some crazy shit happened in my neighborhood. This guy who lives in my building, he was parked on the street, and I guess he had a crazy ex-girlfriend who went and lit his car on fire.
Nice.
And so this car was on fire. It was like crazy stuff. And you looked at him, it's like, oh my God, did you shoot it? Because the idea was like, you can't, that's too much value.
Yes,
go
out
front, that's a get
great,
a camera,
that's a great
go
pyro
up in front
shot.
Of the car and go, oh no, Bobby, why did you do it? Exactly. And then you just shoot that and then
it's
you build a script after that.
A script. He kind of looked at it and was like, it's a great shot, come on.
Just shoot it. There's a car on fire in front of you, you shoot it.
Come on. That was funny, yes. Is he still at DD?
I think so, I think he's in Vancouver.
Oh.
Yeah.
Vancouver. Yeah. I know somebody who's going to Vancouver in January.
Who's that?
Curtis. He's going up to work on a Netflix show.
Oh, okay.
So, but I never
Charles Abouan went up there not too long ago.
Oh, really?
Yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm. A lot of people moving to Vancouver. I hear it's nice to tell me.
I'm not.
You're not going to go to Vancouver?
No.
No, you're with me. I'm fine. I mean, I'm happy down here, and I know that a lot of people are happy in Vancouver, and good for them. That's great for them.
Yeah, I heard it's expensive.
Yeah. Although I heard that there's
$18 a muffin for the breakfast muffins. It's reasonable. It's not too expensive.
Is it really $18?
No, I know somebody who went and got a coffee. Maybe they went to the wrong place. I've never been. But there was like a coffee and a muffin was $18. And like, wow, that was the first hour.
Like London prices.
I know.
They should do movies in London. Oh, wait, they do movies
they
in London.
They do movies. I don't understand.
Yeah, I don't understand why they've chosen the most expensive places in the world.
To bring the tax credit. I know. Like, I never got that because the artists suffer.
Everyone thought it was going to go to India and China because it was going to be cheaper, but they went to the most expensive places. Interesting. It's a weird thing. I don't know.
Nothing's really coming back to LA, is there?
I don't know. I see a lot of signs up, you know, and just for people who understand what I mean by the signs. When there's shoots happening in Los Angeles, there are these yellow and black signs. That's it's right. Yellow signs with black letters on them. And they are up on the street. And they basically, when you're going towards a location, you know, you're doing a shoot, it'll direct you to where you can park and stuff. And it's like, and so the sign will have the name of the production company. And it's just sort of a wired up to a, mm-hmm. a light post of some kind. And that just, there, you know, there's a shoot there. So there's, you used to drive around, you used to see signs all the time. And then for a while you saw no signs. There were no signs, but I'm seeing a lot more signs. So I'm seeing a lot more shooting. There was a big shoot on my street.
What about visual effects? Pretty much gone.
No, just not in film.
Oh yeah. No, I do is commercials and interactive now.
But there's a lot of commercials. VR. There's a lot of commercial work. And I've known a lot. It's not there. These aren't the people that are doing it now are not saying, all right, I'm signing up for 2 years to work on King Kong or whatever. They're signing up for the 6 months here or 3 months here.
Yeah,
or
that's what I
there.
Do. And I just work all year, but I do a lot of commercials. I've done 2 VR shows this year, mm-hmm. and I've done some interactive stuff, and it's great. But I like the shorter term, more creative stuff.
Yeah, and if it's not good, then it's all right. There's something new around the bend, right?
New around the moon.
Right.
So. That's right.
But all right, well, what about some of the other stuff? You know, you always had some amazing stories. That's one of the reasons I always loved hanging out with you, is because you always had some great stories.
Uh-oh.
What was the one you were, the guy from the Eagles?
Glenn. I know he passed away.
Yeah.
When I first moved here, I had to, somebody said, could you help him organize
Glenn Fry,
the bookmarks in his browser.
so this is when the internet was kind of new.
And I was like, you got it, $60 an hour. And I went and go to his office. And,
and you basically organized his bookmarks.
Tabs. Yeah, because he liked gambling or like online, you know, like checking out numbers of sports teams and stuff. Mm-hmm. I just organized it for him. It was like 3 days of work. I was trying to get that all organized, the bookmarks.
And you hung out at his house?
No, his office in Brentwood.
Okay.
Yeah, he had an office in Brentwood. And that was that. And that was like the same time when I first moved here. I remember I was so like coming from New York. I was like, you know, I'm just going to work for my brother's friend, and I basically helped him with his, he would redesign and restore homes for movie stars. And so we worked for Steven Stills, and I remember working with Steven Stills, and it was just like every morning going there, and it was just, you know, with the records on the wall, it was a crazy place with a room full of guitars, with a story for every guitar. Like Keith gave me this to me in 71, it was great. And he was kind of an eccentric guy. But I always remember we had to move a big oven away from the wall, and it was still connected to the gas line. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, whoa, stop. We got to move. They've got the gas line connected. Let's do it. And Steven, with a cigarette, pulls it out of his mouth, still connected to the wall. And the cigarette was like a foot from the gas. It's like, okay, Steven, step back, okay? Big problem with the cigarette and gas. All right, let's get you in the other room. Okay. I'm just saying, man. It's like, I know. Thanks, Steve. Safety tip. Thank you. Go to the other side of the house, please. Like, woo. Close. And he had I remember he pulled up once a Mercedes and he popped the trunk and it was like full of black boots. And I was like, wow. And I just remember it was one of the guys. I was like, that's incredible. Who has a trunk full of black boots? It was like, unbelievable. It's like all boots. I was like, that's a lot of boots. I was like, oh, my God. And his house was old Crocodile Dundee's house in Mulholland.
Oh, really?
So it was all Outback themed. I felt like it was like,
oh, my God.
It was crazy.
Is he the one that would have like a turkey dinner just delivered every day?
He had a big, I remember coming in one day and it was a turkey on the kitchen table, untouched, with a huge knife stabbed into the breast. And I was like, okay, tough night. And I remember he had somebody do work for him in our crew that we were working. This is what, 97, 96? 96, yeah. Summer of 96. And when I first moved here from the city, and he had him do work. He said, you know, I'm just going to pay you with a guitar. And this guy, Timbo, was like, okay, so go into the room, and there must have been 160 guitars there. He said, just grab one, it's yours, man. And so he grabbed one, and he spent some time with it, and he looked around, literally like a Fender. There was like a 59 Fender, 57 Fender that was Jerry Garcia's that he had. I mean, God, it was crazy. And then he walked out with a Gretsch White Falcon, and it was Neil Young's that he played on Harvest.
Wow.
And so his manager called and said, "You grabbed the wrong guitar." And he's like, "You know, Steven gave it to me." Okay. And you can hear Steven in the background saying, "Marty, just let him have it. Deal's a deal, man." So he had, and the crazy story is that he was telling that story to somebody, and that person lived next door to a woman who was Neil's first wife. Uh-huh. And she's like, "Oh, that's a crazy story." And she goes next door and comes back with the Martin acoustic and said, "He used this on Old Man. You can have it."
Mm.
So he ended up with two guitars. I was like, "How does that happen?" I was like, you know, all I got was almost exploding with Stephen Stills when gas leak, and you get two guitars.
Right.
So, but those were when
you've had some great experiences.
That was when I first moved here.
I still remember the other story that was awesome. Was when Nancy, your wife Nancy, and she was, this is a long time ago, she was at a laundromat in Hollywood, and you were coming off work, and it's like, "Oh, I'll just meet you at the laundromat."
Oh yeah,
and
baby.
She wasn't there. You were just basically waiting for her there.
That's right.
And tell them the story for me. You know what I'm talking about.
I'm at the laundromat, Third and Sweetser, and I'm literally waiting. I'm like, "Where the hell is Nancy?" And I see this guy over there folding whites. I'm like, "What the?" And I'm like, keep looking. I kind of walk closer to him, and I'm like, "Where's Nancy?" And I'm looking over to him, and he's like, "As close as you are to me." And I was like, "Eric?" And he's like, "Yes," with his English accent. I'm like, "Eric Clapton?" And he's like, "Yes." I was like, "What are you doing here?" He's like, "Doing my laundry." I was like, and we talked a bit. And, you know, he basically was there recording for a Les Paul tribute album. And he had some time. And he just said, "I'll just do some laundry." And I looked out, and there was this Porsche there with, like, beautiful Porsche with these yellow brakes. You know, like, you could see through the rims, the yellow brakes. And I was like, "What the?" And we talked a little bit about the Cream concert. And I told Scott Ross, because I used to go into Scott Ross' office, and we used to talk guitars.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Scott met Roy Orbison, which was one of my favorite idols. And we always talk about Keith Richards, guitars, and the great Cream. And I told him, and he's at first he's like, "What? Impossible." I was like, "No, he was at the Spur and Sweetser." And that was great.
I hung out with Eric Clapton at the laundromat.
Third and Sweetser. And he just went to London with his kids and took him to see Cream at the Royal Albert Hall.
Yeah. I mean, clearly it was him. You had a long conversation.
Oh, yeah. It was cool, dude. It was so cool. It was great. I just need to meet Jeff Beck now, because I met Keith, I met Eric. I just need to meet Jeff Beck, and then it kind of ties it up. That's my bucket list, I think.
Keith Richards, you met Keith?
I met Keith, and
did you meet Keith?
Oh, 90 in New York. It was great.
Mm.
It was great. I'm huge Keith, Nick Cave. I've met Lou. Used to live across the street, Lou Reed, when I lived in the West Village.
Right.
I always used to see Lou at the video store. And Lou is always somebody I loved. And Bowie.
Ever met Bowie?
I never met Bowie, and it broke my heart, because he was one of my, like Aladdin saying, had transformed me as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
But Lou, I loved, oh God, and so much, all his music, from even like songs at Drella, Magic and Loss. And I distinctly remember one time in the Village, I was right looking over Christopher Street, and I was doing work, and I put on Magic and Loss, and I was listening to it. I said, "I got to go rent a movie." I was going to go rent Fitzcarraldo. So I go across the street. It's like 11:30 at night. And I walk into the video store. It's empty. And I walk to the back, look up Fitzcarraldo. I look to my right, and Lou's there with Laurie Anderson. I was like, "Oh, dude." I was like, "Lou, how are you?" It was just like, it was pure. Then I get up to the front, and the guy's rewinding tapes, this big guy. And he said, "Don't talk to Lou." And I said, "What are you talking about? Don't talk to Lou. I saw you talking to Lou. Don't talk to him." I was like, "I just said hello. I just, what did he say? Don't talk to Lou." I mean, so every time I get in, he's like, "I'm watching you." Because he said, you know, Lou's worried about his privacy. But Lou was very nice. So mm-hmm. I'd see him in the summers walking. And I'd say hi. Mm-hmm. And I said this when he passed. Like, literally, it would leave me speechless. Every time I'd say hi to him on the street.
Right.
I would just be like, "My God, how much did he change music?" I mean, he, with the Velvets, he changed Bowie. He influenced. Bowie always played White Light, White Heat at all the shows.
Mm-hmm.
He absolutely transformed music. He was just a pure poet. Just incredible. And I know it's hard for some people to get into his music, but it's great. And Nick Cave, I feel the same way. I think he's a genius too.
What do you see yourself as?
Oh, God. still working on that one with a little therapy. I don't.
That's a fair question, though, and it's a fair answer that you gave me, because I think the undefinition is okay, because I think it'll help you overall.
Sure.
Right? You do painting. Yeah. You do music. You do filmmaking. You do VR stuff. You do visual effects. You do computer graphics and motion graphics. You do everything. You're a little bit...
Yeah, I think for me, though, I've been trying to focus more. I have some loves, and I definitely feel like I'm trying to just scale back and focus my energies. But I've always had a love for like the arts growing up, you know, born in the city but raised outside, and always being in the city on the weekends. And how many shows? I used to go by myself to shows when I was a teen in New York.
In New York City, just for
people. Oh, yeah. I just always go...
You and I both sort of have an association with the Northeast. And so when people say the city, no matter where you lived, between Canada and maybe Virginia, when people say the city, they mean New York City.
That's right.
And more specifically, Manhattan.
Manhattan. Yeah, just going to see shows, Manhattan. Yeah. Like, just like going and seeing, like, you know, Stevie Ray Vaughan at a club. It would just, right. It just is like unbelievable, the stuff. And I just would love it. I would just
go. Music was important to you.
Yeah.
It still is.
Yeah. I would always like go. I would just, you know, I would always wear my blazer. I would wear a jacket. Yeah. And showed up. I remember once, like, Dee Snider of Twisted Sister gave me crap about my jacket.
Really?
Yeah. And he's like, kid, what's the matter with you? It's my style, man. Shut up.
I'm wearing a jacket.
Twisted like Sister. I was like 16 years old. But
you're wearing a blazer at 16?
Yeah.
Well, you're from Connecticut.
I had my, that's my thing, man.
You look good.
That's good, my style. And so I just remember.
Still got that hair?
Yes. Still got the hair. I'm almost 40.
No, almost.
No, I'm almost 50. One foot in the grave. But yes, it was a big, big part ever since I was a young kid.
What's his name? Romeo, what's his, Guy Romeo, is that your hairdresser?
Guy, not anymore. I got a new guy.
Really?
Yeah.
What happened to Guy Romeo?
Guy's awesome, but I found this Japanese guy in K-Town, and he's just unbelievable. He works magic, so okay. I stick to him.
Okay.
And I think you always would get after me about my hair cuts or how many doctors I have. So I have 7 doctors, and you would always just like come after me. Like,
yeah, well, you're... All right.
I've got
a couple of my favorite Eric Chili stories.
Okay.
And one of them I have to phrase it this way. It's when someone asked me, like, you know, give me an impression of Eric. It's like, I think Eric is really great. He's very creative, but I think he's got a little, you know, and he come up to me and I say, Eric, I think you're fine, but I think you get a little bit of a low self-esteem. You think I have low self-esteem?
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, and yes, you're a hypochondriac, and that's okay.
That's okay.
That's okay.
It's good to have a
but
lot
I remember
of doctors.
The time you went to the doctor and you were convinced you had mouth cancer.
Yeah.
You convinced that you had cancer and you ran to the doctor.
That's
and
right.
Freaked out and like, we got to do all these tests. I have cancer.
That's right.
And then they said, looks like you burned your lip.
I burned my lip.
I was like, oh, that, I did have a cigar last night. Yeah. You burned your lip.
Yeah. Those were the old days. I was more of a hypochondriac. I'm better now.
You seem better.
Yeah. You know, it's fine. I it's nothing wrong with seeing good doctors, but yeah, I still go to a lot of doctors. Do you know what's interesting? And I'm not trying to...
You're a little bit like, what's his name, Inner Space. Remember that guy? Who was the guy in Inner Space? What am I thinking of? Oh, Short. Not Martin Short. Yeah, Martin. No. Whatever. Anyway, tell me your story.
The thing I was going to say is that I wanted to bring up, not, it didn't have to be on the podcast, but I, and it's a serious topic, and I'm not trying to divert. It's that I ran into, and I've become reconnected with a guy that we used to work with.
Okay,
who's that? Ted Andre.
Oh, Ted, yes, of course.
Love it. And I hooked him up with a friend of mine, old dear friend of mine, who's over at Endeavor.
Mm-hmm.
And I just felt there would be a good connection, and he's trying to produce films, and he's doing wonderful stuff. And he's like, oh, I got to get my eyes operated on. And he's going.
Ted did.
Yeah, okay. A week and a half ago. And he said, I'm going to this doctor, Dr. Kotobash, amazing doctor. And I was like, he operated on my eye. We both had a cataract surgery.
Oh, you did too?
I did too. Okay. And I'm like, how many more people from Visual Effects are going to pop up?
With cataract problems, right? Because I know Greg Teagarden had cataract surgery too.
Did he really?
Yeah. Cataract surgery at the age of 40 is a little bit scary, right?
It is.
Well, part of me thinks this. Okay, now I'm going to play a little devil's advocate
again.
Here we
go. This is.
I think because we are so attuned to what we're seeing that we are more conscious of the fact that something's going wrong that people may not realize for another 10, 15 years. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Because we look at every detail. If something looks a little fuzzy, we freak out. Most people don't even realize that there's something fuzzy there. And I think we're more attuned to it than other people are. And so I think that happens. In fact, there was an FX Guide podcast that was brilliant. It was done with Jeff Huser, I believe. And he had cataract surgery too. He's also a visual. He's a flame artist. And his podcast was with actually his eye doctor about how to take proper care of your eyes. There is definitely a problem with us because we stare at a screen for a long periods of times. We don't focus far. We don't, you know, there's the 20-20-20 rule, I guess, right? It's like every 20 minutes, look at least 20 feet away for 20 seconds, right?
Yeah, that's going to happen in our business.
Right? But we don't think to do that.
That's right.
We don't think every 20 minutes to get up and for 20 feet away for 20 minutes. Right?
That's right.
So we don't continue our focus. Our eyes are hyper, hyper, you know, narrow field in a lot of ways. But I don't know. I think, yeah, Ted had cataract surgery. And did you get an implant put in? I guess that's what they do, right?
Yeah.
So it was interesting because I talked to my father had cataract surgery, but, you know, at the normal age of 70 plus,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And so he was telling me about the implant and all this different stuff. And so I started researching the implants thing. And one of the things that's interesting is that when they put – one of the reasons when we're older, right? You need reading glasses, right?
Yes.
You're like me. So my glasses are progressive. So the bottom of my glasses is a different prescription than the upper end of my glasses, so I can read. And one of the reasons that happens when you're older is the lens inside your eye hardens with age.
Yes.
And so you can't, the muscles don't make it contract, so you can't focus on things that are close anymore. That's why they get hard, and that's why you need an extra lens to focus on something harder or something closer. But apparently they're making, since you're getting cataract surgery, they're taking that lens out anyway and
yes.
replacing it. They now have a lens that is soft.
Oh.
So you can actually focus again.
Because
like
it can
bend. Because it can
bend. I can't. I lost all my
Right. But
vision.
Apparently they're looking into this for cataract surgery. So I talked to my doctor because he was saying, you know, we're talking about other options besides glasses like LASIK, et cetera. And he goes, well, at your age, you're going to need reading glasses anyway. So what's the point of LASIK? And I'm like, okay. A little bit of agree. And I said, what about implants?
Yeah.
And I said, yeah. And he goes, well, first of all, that's way more aggressive or, invasive. And he says, yeah, but you can do the focus thing now because they got these soft lenses. And he was saying, yeah. And then he knows that I work in visual effects. He's a great eye doctor. He says, I'm not sure. He says, for people who need it, who have cataract stuff, then it's a much better option for them. It's great. But if you don't need it, like electively choosing to put implants,
yeah.
it's like he said, first of all, you'll probably lose about 1 to 2 stops of light,
mm-hmm.
like because the implant is actually
that's
the tumor,
right.
And you may actually lose some saturation.
I only had it on my right eye.
Right.
So this eye is fine, though in 5 years I have to get this done.
Right.
It is warm and in my right eye is cool.
Right.
So I just switch eyes and it's amazing.
You can, yeah. So you can, so
it's like
does.
Fuji Kodak.
Yeah.
It's
well, because it's a different lens.
Oh, yeah. I did the – here's my mistake on that whole thing was I watched the video of the surgery after, about a week after. And
of your own surgery.
Yeah. It was – God, it just gave me – it made me even more neurotic even though I just had the surgery. But I wanted – I asked to be knocked out.
Right.
And I remember I got there. I'm in the blue robe and the guy, the anesthesiologist comes up and he says, okay, we're going to do this. Anything else I should know? And I was like – you know, I got a heart murmur and he's like, oh, hold on 1 minute. And he walked away and he's talking to the doctor and they're like, we're not going to do the anesthesia. So we'll just do straight. So I had to sit through it. And it was, It was like, it was so brutal.
I know you. That must have been horrible.
Oh, I couldn't move my head, and they cut it open with a diamond knife and explained it as they're going. I'm like, just do it, please. But what was crazy, here's a true story. True story. When they took my lens off, I was staring at the ceiling. It went white, okay?
Right.
Went white. And then a blue box would sit in the center. Uh-huh. And exploded to 1,000 tiny blue boxes, and it came back as yellow. Exploded, came back as red, green, and all these primary colors. It kept coming back to one square and then exploding to the edges and coming back as blue. And that's the whole experience when I didn't have my lens on.
Mm-hmm.
Strange.
Strange. Hmm? You can write a short about that.
Don't know if I want to do that, but I...
Maybe it's a good VR experience.
But the doctor said there are a lot of experiences like that because they essentially took the lens out. So it's right. Just a back plate and just...
Yeah. But it's like opening up a camera and taking a picture that's with right. No lens in there.
No lens. That's exactly what it was. But I thought it was surprisingly fast, 27 minutes. But it's amazing, the technology.
Yeah.
It's amazing. But there's also an amazing amount of people, the doctors don't do a good job.
Mm.
And the guy I went to is considered one of the best in the world, but...
Of course he is.
Well, but the point is, it was...
But that's your thing. You find the best doctors in the world.
Well, it's my eyeball. It's not like I have 10 lying on my head. You know. So I definitely was like, all right, let's do this. But it came... I literally lost my sight before I realized I needed the surgery.
Right.
So I was like, what's the matter? And then my doctor's like, oh, you need surgery. I was like... Say that again? But I'm sorry to hear about the other guys, but after having dinner with Ted about a month ago or 2 months ago, I was like, wait a minute. I bet you this is going to be a big problem for VFX artists.
No, I know. Anyone listening who is a visual effects artist and know people who have, you know, cataract surgery recently, and especially people at our age, right? Because there's a lot of people who, like you and I.
I had it at 47. So
47. So I don't have it yet, but I have glasses on all the time that have UV protection coating on them.
Yeah.
Right? So I don't have it, but I know a lot of people. First of all, I think Greg Teagarden used to play around with crazy-ass lasers all the time.
Do you remember? Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, you remember he used to buy all those crazy ultraviolet lasers and stuff?
I still think we're going to see a lot of people with, and not just carpal tunnel or, you know, rounded shoulders. It's going to be a lot of the stuff because we're staring at the screens for so long.
And I think you're right. I think
I think the early days.
I mean, look at Ted, for example, right? Ted's a very good compositor.
Amazing.
He sits in a dark room and doesn't move for hours on end, staring at comps.
I know.
Right? Maybe that will have an effect on your vision.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. But it's interesting enough.
I'm worried about my wife, too, because she says Oflambe does the same thing. Luckily, she wears glasses. I think there's something to be said about the glasses protecting your eyes from UV rays. Maybe it's from the LCD screens. Who knows?
Okay, but here's the question now. I'm throwing it back, Chris, right? the thing is, kids on iPads.
Yeah. Yeah, my kids don't play that much.
Or kids on their phone. I mean, there's all these new issues that are going to come up in about 20 years where everyone's staring at stuff. Hyper staring for so long that, you know, what are the damages?
And they're seeing it in China already.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God.
Yeah. I saw Paula Poundstone, which was awesome, by the way. Paula Poundstone, she was hilarious, but she did went into a little sociological rant about the effects of
technology
on, and there's a name for it now. It's like, you know, there's a carpal tunnel. Everyone used to kind of joke about that as this rich man's disease of typing on a computer.
That's right.
But it is a serious problem, obviously. And then the same thing is going to happen with kids and vision problems.
And hearing, because they're putting the earphones on and playing really loud.
I don't know. Maybe that's true too. But I think it's just the narrow focus, right? Narrow, narrow, narrow focus. No peripheral vision, et cetera. So I don't know. My kids do play on tablets. I'll just say that they do, but it's very, very limited. When we go out and at night or we're on the restaurant, they never bring their tablets with them. Never. They're
so 11 hours a day or 10.
No, they never do. They probably play on their tablets a total of maybe less than an hour a day.
Hmm. That's good.
Less than an hour. They interact. But my thing about my kids that I'm very proud of is that we encourage them to socially interact with adults. A lot of people have a hard time with that because they don't know how to talk to kids.
Yeah, that's true.
But my kids make it easy because they've been used to talking to adults for years. So they just sit there and have a conversation with you. So I think that's an important skill that will become very, very sought after in the future when most kids have completely lost their social skills.
You know, it's interesting. My sister told me a couple days ago she went to pick up one of her kids in Florida from school, and she passed another school, and all the kids were waiting for their parents to pick them up, and they all were just looking at their phones, even though they were 2 feet away from each other. Just nobody was like, you know, looking at trading cards or like telling stories. It was just that everyone was just looking at their own phone and not even communicating. Right. She's like, think about the implications of that.
Yeah, she's right.
That's crazy.
She's right.
I know.
Or you go to a restaurant and you see like four teenagers and they're all sitting there. No one's talking to each other. When we were kids and teenagers, we were getting kicked out of restaurants because we were doing stupid things like throwing French fries at each other. But we were talking to each other.
That's right.
We were laughing. We were laughing. I don't see anyone laughing on their phone.
No. So that's a big problem. That's a big, big problem.
Right.
I think that's going to affect a lot of kids.
Right.
And you don't realize that until it's kind of like staring at a screen for so long. And then like 17, 18 years later, I'm getting eye surgery. It's like, you know, I could have taken better steps.
I'm sure you'll be fine, Eric.
I'll be okay.
You'll be okay. Well, first of all, you've got, like I said, okay, so my eyes are not necessarily 100%, but I've got 17 other ideas, just like what I was talking about earlier. I mean, that's the thing that you have, is you have a lot of ideas.
You got to keep going.
Excuse me. Anyway, what, besides Danger Tokyo and Missing Mia, is there any other shorts you've done recently?
I haven't done one I ended up just starting to write more, and I wrote a lot of features, and then I flamed out about a year and a half ago. I just said I need a break, and okay. I just basically focused on work and spending a lot of time with my daughter and just trying to shift things. I feel like I have to kind of focus my career, like where it's going, because it's shifting so much in terms of like the business, mm-hmm. before I can, you know, kind of jump back onto something. So,
okay. Well, is Missing Mia online? Because I love
it. It's all online on my website and my new website I'm going to put up. I took this job just now. Yeah. So I'm going to be busy, and then I'm trying to take January off.
I just want to make sure I can share it with people on the podcast.
Yes, there's a lot of stuff on my website you can connect to, and the new website. And then I appreciate that. Yeah. And it's just basically, I gotta get that new site up. It's hard because when you work and you work in commercials, you're there 13, 14 hours a day. It's crazy, mm-hmm. but it's good. You know, it's a cool job. But no, I appreciate you having me too.
Yeah, it's fun. I always like hanging out with you. It's always a lot of fun. And like I said, you know, I do these podcasts with Thrawn, and he's come on, and we've done some great conversations. One of the days is I think you should come in as another person we can all really
We used to talk a lot at the job we were on, and it would be great. It was just talking about
you guys are both at PSYOP.
No, we were across the street, which I won't say the name. And it was, and we worked for almost a year together on for Bungie.
Right.
And
That's right.
Animatic. And we worked together. It was great. We just talk about movies and.
Right.
And he definitely, and he was shooting at that time. I think he was shooting something. He shot a short. And, but I first met him when I helped you guys out on that V-Ray.
V-Ray RL.
Yeah.
Yeah. You were our ID for a while.
I helped out. And then, and that was with, Thrawn. That was with you. That was with Rob Niederhorst.
Rob Niederhorst.
Where's Rob now?
I think he's at Zero Effects.
Okay.
Which is, interestingly, at the old Speed Shape building on Venice.
Oh, my God.
Which was the old Mannix building.
That's right.
Which is where they made...
Mildred.
The Matrix.
Was the street.
Right. So I think that's where they are. Now, I may be completely
and
wrong.
And it's owned by the guys from Zinc Creators.
Yes. Sean Devereaux is one of the guys there. So Sean and Throb and those guys. So, you know, it's all... It's all the same group of guys. We all know each other. It's a small industry, dude.
I know. But everyone's still working, which is good.
Yeah, see? The sky hasn't fallen. We've just found new direction, right? A lot of my friends have done that. A lot of people going into VR. A lot of people...
That's really where I'm trying to get more
into. A lot of my friends are going out there. I got a lot of friends working for Magic Leap. Okay? They're all from the visual effects industry.
How many people? There's Pats out there.
Yeah.
Magic Leap in Florida.
I don't know how much I can say.
You don't want to cite it, but the point is, Pat is in Florida, but there's one office here.
There's an office in Santa Monica, yeah. And I know five people there.
Wow, that's great.
And so they're interesting, and they're doing great. But that's another thing. Like, there's always different opportunities. The skill set that we have for computer graphics is not just for blowing up the White House, right?
Yeah. I mean, for me, the VR, AR stuff is really right. Where I'm trying to merge more into, because I think that's a great platform for all the skill sets we have. Mm-hmm. But I'm interested to know if that Magic Leap, I read an article, Forbes had an article like last month or 2 weeks ago mm-hmm. about the owner or the creator, well, the CEO.
Came out a couple days ago, I think.
Oh, really? The point is, I wonder, because it scans into your eye, if you have cataracts, you can use it.
Well,
I mean, if you have, I don't know if it's safe for, because I think they project into your
eye. They project into your eye.
Here's the thing,
and I want to make sure you understand this, because this is, and I don't know the technology, but this is me just speculating, because I've never seen it, I don't know anything about it, I don't know if it's safe or whatever. It sounds scary, but technically, the world does that anyway. It shoots rays directly into your eyes,
sure.
Right? That's how you see. So whether it's a laser projection or not, it doesn't matter. What matters is the wavelength, right?
Yes. I would check before. For me personally.
Before shooting a laser directly into your eyeball?
We forgot to put the sticker on the headset. Don't if you have cataracts. You still have one good eye. It's fine.
Well, if you got one lens replaced, you can just replace it again.
Let's do it again.
It's like an oil change.
It's nothing. Don't worry about it.
You'll just see these squares and explode.
Our bad.
There'll we're going to put that, square
war- we're gonna put that square. Warning label on. I'm going to get to the guy about this, okay? We're going to put a warning label on. But it looks amazing. Yeah. It looks amazing.
Well, the thing is that it puts the image on your eye.
That's right.
So that... That's much more real than looking at a screen. So I don't know.
Have you tried like the HoloLens or Meta?
Yep.
I've tried the HoloLens and Meta.
Well, the HoloLens is pretty cool. That's basically a silk screen thing, right? Or a screen in front of you. What's the most impressive about the HoloLens, and probably what the Magic Leap is too, I don't know what it is, but what's
tracking.
The most is the freaking tracking. You're right. It's incredible. Like, how is this little thing that's a computer on my head that does all this stuff, tracking the room around me perfectly.
Yes. The tracking is amazing. And the Meta I tried too.
I don't know the Meta.
The Meta, yeah. It's like $950 instead of $3,000 for the developer's kit. And I tried it at a convention, the VR convention in downtown. And it's great. The tracking was not as good as the HoloLens, but it's still cool. Mm. But the resolution was amazing.
Oh, interesting.
So you zoom in on it. Was amazing. It handled opacity maps and clouds really well.
Wow.
Look at I'll send you a link.
Okay.
Meta. Okay. But you're tethered.
You're tethered.
Whereas the HoloLens, you're not tethered.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
So.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anything else you want to tell us about?
You know, I think.
You want to come back and tell us
more
stories?
I will come back and tell more stories. And I'll come back with Daniel.
With Daniel Fong?
Oh, yeah.
And you also told me about some great ideas of other guests you can have. So
I'm going to put a whole little list together for you, and I'll sell you the list. No, I will hook you up with a list.
I will pay you back in graphics cards and cloud points.
I'd like, imagine being on the side of a highway, VFX artist looking for cloud points. Like, did you get off like the 110? It's like, I got to finish this render, man.
Holding a cardboard sign.
It's getting more points.
I need some cloud points.
I almost finished my short film. It's animated. I need more cloud points. I really took the rendering down, and it's like an hour and a half a frame.
That's only if I use 8 cores.
8 cores. I need to do it. Soon that will happen. Mostly around USC, but yes.
Have you read Ready Player One?
No,
you got to read it.
Daniel.
Oh, you'd love it.
Really?
Yes. Trust me. I did the audiobook, which I loved, read by Will Wheaton.
Okay, because Daniel Thrawn told me that I would love it.
Yes, he's absolutely right. It's a little heavy on the nostalgia of the 80s, but in a sense, it's also awesome because of it.
Yeah.
It's got some great plot twists. I like it. It's good.
All right.
And everyone keeps saying, Ready Player One is so important. It's like, it's a fun movie, or it's a fun book, fun story.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it's going to be a fun movie. Hopefully, Mr. Spielberg does a good job on it, but I'm sure he will. Because it's personified around the genre that Spielberg was
part of.
Right?
Yeah, yeah. So, that's great.
All right. We're going to let this one go.
Let this one. Thank you so much. And have a happy holiday.
Have a happy holiday. Actually, this probably will come out after the new year. So hopefully everyone is had a happy new year.
Have a happy new year.
And a happy 2017. Is that a prime number? No, it's not.
It's not?
No. I'm not sure, actually. I can't do that one in my head too fast. But it's been great. Thanks so much.
Thank you.